Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hillary Clinton before the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning for her confirmation hearing for Secretary of State. This hour, On Point will listen in on that hearing and look at the tough challenges ahead for U.S. foreign policy. You can join the conversation. What would your question be for Hillary Clinton, soon to be, it appears, Madam Secretary? On Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, Gaza, China, Pakistan, we're going to be ducking in and out of today's Senate confirmation hearing for Senator Clinton. We'll have some keen observers of U.S. foreign policy along with us to look at Clinton's challenges as we do. Joining us first from Washington, Charles Kupchan. He's senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and a professor of international relations at Georgetown University. Served on the National Security Council during President Bill Clinton's first term. He's author of The End of the American Era, U.S. Foreign Policy and the Geopolitics of the 21st Century, and the forthcoming How Enemies Become Friends. Charles Kupchan, welcome to On Point.
Happy to join you.
And with us from across the Atlantic, Christopher Dickey is here, Newsweek's Paris bureau chief and Middle East regional editor. His new book out next month is Securing the City Inside America's Best Counter-Terror Force, the NYPD. Chris Dickey in Paris, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Let's get just a little bit of the warm welcome that Hillary Clinton got before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning. Here's committee chairman, new chairman, Senator John Kerry, who himself wanted this job of Secretary of State, praising Clinton, saying she would help improve America's standing in the world.
She will take office on a first-name basis with numerous heads of state, but also with billions of people in every corner of the globe, those billions of people that the Obama administration hopes to reach, inspire, and influence. Her presence overseas will send a strong signal immediately that America is back.
Praise, not surprising, from Democratic Senator John Kerry. Indiana Senator Richard Lugar, ranking Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, also very warm in his welcome of Hillary Clinton today before the committee, saying she has the right qualifications for the job.
She has a long-standing relationship with many world leaders that could be put to great use in the service of our country. Her time in the Senate has given her a deep understanding of how United States foreign policy can be enriched by establishing a closer relationship between the executive and legislative branches.
Senator Richard Lugar, Republican of Indiana. He went on to say that there are issues around the Clinton Foundation, the $500 million-plus that's been raised by her husband, former President Bill Clinton. He recommended that the Clinton Foundation stop raising any money during the time that Hillary Clinton serves as Secretary of State to avoid any appearance of a conflict of interest or the buying of influence. Hillary Clinton will herself be at the microphone in just a minute, and we'll turn to her when she gets there. Charles Kupchan, first to you. In brief, how do you see the challenge facing Hillary Clinton if and when, and it looks as though she will be, Madam Secretary of State?
Well, the introduction by Senator Lugar and Senator Kerry were very warm and basically sort of saying, we have before us a very competent person, indicating that the green light is already on. The big hurdle, I think, will be, as Senator Lugar said, the question of Bill Clinton's foundation. How can funds be accepted if they are accepted without compromising her independence? And, you know, it remains to be seen, but I think as a starting point, the key issue will be transparency, that any donors that do provide funds, that needs to be clearly stated so that Hillary Clinton can make sure that she has an arm's-length relationship with any foreign countries or donors.
Hillary Clinton talking a lot about smart power in her prepared text today, saying, I believe American leadership has been wanting but is still wanted. Swipe at the Bush administration, saying foreign policy must be based on a marriage of principles and pragmatism, not rigid ideology. Chris Dickey in Paris, you cover Europe and the Middle East. What do you see, again in brief, the world hoping for, expecting from Hillary Clinton?
I think they're hoping for just what she's describing, an environment in which the Americans actually not only talk to their allies, but listen to their allies. To the extent that she's sending that message and she'll follow through on it, it's tremendously welcome in Europe and I'd say in almost all the rest of the world.
Let's turn to Hillary Clinton before the Foreign Relations Committee.
as you take on this new role. You've traveled quite a distance from that day back in 1971 when you testified here as a young Vietnam veteran. You have never faltered in your care and concern for our nation, its foreign policy, and its future.
Here she speaks to
and America is
Senator
in good
John
hands
Kerry
with you leading this committee. And Senator Lugar, I look forward to working with you on a wide range of issues, especially those of greatest concern to you, including the Nunn-Lugar Initiative. And let me say a word to Senator Voinovich. Because of his announcement yesterday, I want to commend you for your service to the people of Ohio. And I ask for your help in the next 2 years on the management issues that you have long championed. It is an honor and a privilege to be here this morning as President-elect Obama's nominee for Secretary of State. I am deeply grateful for the trust and keenly aware of the responsibility that the President-elect has placed in me to serve our country and to serve our people at a time of such grave dangers and great possibilities. If confirmed, I will accept the duties of the office with gratitude, humility, and firm determination to represent the United States as energetically and faithfully as I can. At the same time, I must confess that sitting across the table from so many colleagues brings me sadness, too. I love the Senate. And if you confirm me for this new role, it will be hard to say goodbye to so many members, Republicans and Democrats, whom I have come to know, admire, and respect deeply. And to this institution, where I have been so proud to serve on behalf of the people of New York through some very difficult days over the past 8 years. But I assure you, I will be in frequent consultation and conversation with the members of this committee, the House Foreign Affairs Committee, the Appropriations Committees, and with Congress as a whole. And I look forward to working with my good friend, Vice President-elect Biden, who's been a valued colleague and a very valued chairman of this committee. For me, consultation is not a catchword, it is a commitment. The President-elect and I believe that we must return to the time-honored principle of bipartisanship in our foreign policy, an approach that has served our nation well. I look forward to working with all of you to renew America's leadership through diplomacy that enhances our security, advances our interests, and reflects our values. Today, our nation and our world face great perils, from ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to the continuing threats posed by terrorist extremists, to the spread of weapons of mass destruction, from the dangers of climate change to pandemic disease, from financial meltdown to worldwide poverty. The 70 days since the presidential election offer fresh evidence of these challenges. New conflict in Gaza, terrorist attacks in Mumbai, mass killings and rapes in the Congo, cholera in Zimbabwe, reports of record-high greenhouse gases and rapidly melting glaciers, and even an ancient form of terror, piracy, asserting itself in modern form off the Horn of Africa. Always and especially in the crucible of these global challenges, our overriding duty is to protect and advance America's security, interests, and values, to keep our people, our nation, and our allies secure, to promote economic growth and shared prosperity at home and abroad, and to strengthen America's position of global leadership so we remain a positive force in the world, whether in working to preserve the health of our planet or expanding opportunity for people on the margins whose progress and prosperity will add to our own. Our world has undergone an extraordinary transformation in the last two decades. In 1989, a wall fell and old barriers began to crumble after 40 years of a Cold War that had influenced every aspect of our foreign policy. By 1999, the rise of more democratic and open societies, the expanding reach of world markets, and the explosion of information technology.
Senator Hillary Clinton, in her opening remarks before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee today, she had a very warm reception. Hillary Clinton is in the hearing room with her. Bill Clinton, the former president, is not. Charles Kupchan, just to be clear here, is there any question about her being confirmed as Secretary of State?
I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a done deal, but I do think that she is someone very highly regarded by all the senators that are on the podium there. And I would be very, very surprised if she doesn't sail through.
Chris Dickey in Paris. I was reading Nicholas Burns, who, of course, was at the right hand of Condoleezza Rice and earlier in the Clinton administration, saying that Obama and, by extension, Hillary Clinton will face the most difficult and daunting set of domestic and foreign policy challenges since at least Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1933. Any doubt that this Secretary of State has a very tall hill to climb globally?
No, she has a huge job to do, and really the success of the presidency to a certain extent is going to depend on the level of cooperation between Obama and Hillary Clinton and the extent to which she can take over the foreign policy job without seeming to undermine the authority of the presidency. Because it's basically the portfolios, the files they have on their desks, both of them, are so difficult to deal with, so complex, and so dangerous for the future of the United States, both economically, politically, in terms of foreign relations, that we're going to need some very strong teamwork here to get through it.
Senator Lugar saying this morning in his welcome to Senator Clinton, talking about Obama's bold move, Charles Kupchan, in inviting her to be Secretary of State after their very tough primary battle for the Democratic nomination for the presidency.
You know, I think it was a combination of two things. One, Senator Obama, President-elect Obama, wanted to try to reunite the party, which was quite significantly divided by the primary season. And he saw in Senator Clinton someone who would represent the United States abroad in a very different light than the Bush administration. So it was in some ways a double winner for President-elect Obama.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and listening in on her Senate confirmation hearing this morning. Here she is, continuing her opening statement before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, talking about Secretary of Defense Robert Gates.
That the State Department must be fully empowered and funded to confront multidimensional challenges, from thwarting terrorism to spreading health and prosperity in places of human suffering. And I will speak in greater detail about that in a moment.
She's referring here to Robert Gates' call for a stronger State Department, stronger diplomatic arm to complement America's military might.
Both Democratic and Republican presidents have understood that these institutions, when they work well, enhance our influence. And when they don't work well, as in the cases of Darfur and the farce of Sudan's election to the former UN Commission on Human Rights, we should work with like-minded friends to make them more effective. We will lead with diplomacy because that's the smart approach. But we also know that military force will sometimes be necessary, and we will rely on it to protect our people and our interests when and where needed as a last resort. All the while, we must remember that to promote our interests around the world, America must be an exemplar of our values. Senator Isaacson made the point to me the other day that our nation must lead by example rather than edict. Our history has shown that we are most effective when we see the harmony between our interests abroad and our values at home. Our first Secretary of State, Thomas Jefferson, subscribed to that view, reminding us across the centuries, the interests of a nation, when well understood, will be found to coincide with their moral duties. Senator Lugar, I'm going to borrow your words here, too. As you said, the United States cannot feed every person, lift every person out of poverty, cure every disease, or stop every conflict. But our power and status have conferred upon us a tremendous responsibility to humanity. Of course, we must be realistic. Even under the best of circumstances, our nation cannot solve every problem or meet every global need. We don't have unlimited time, treasure, or manpower, especially with our own economy faltering and our budget deficits growing. So to fulfill our responsibility to our children, to protect and defend our nation while honoring our values, we have to establish priorities. I'm not trying to mince words here. As my colleagues in the Senate know, establishing priorities means making tough choices. Because these choices are so important to the American people, we must be disciplined in evaluating them, weighing the costs and consequences of action or inaction, gauging the probability of success, and insisting on measurable results. Right after I was nominated, a friend told me, the world has so many problems, you've got your work cut out for you. Well, I agree, but I don't get up every morning thinking only about the threats and dangers we face. In spite of all the adversity and complexity, there are so many opportunities for America out there, calling forth the optimism and can-do spirit that has marked our progress for more than two centuries. Too often, we see the ills that plague us more clearly than the possibilities in front of us. But it is the real possibility of progress, of that better life, free from fear and want and discord, that offers our most compelling message to the rest of the world.
Senator Hillary Clinton testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning. Of course, the committee will vote, and if she's given the green light, it goes to the full Senate for a vote for her confirmation as Secretary of State. Listening with me from Paris, Christopher Dickey, a Paris bureau chief for Newsweek magazine and Middle East regional editor, and from Washington, Charles Kupchan, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, professor at Georgetown University. Charles Kupchan, in the opening words of Senator Clinton here, what do you hear in this voice, in her opening testimony, the kind of tone of it as she looks out on the challenges facing her both in Washington and beyond?
Well, I think one of the main messages is that the United States needs to balance leadership, a readiness to use force when needed, with a return to a different brand of internationalism, one that's more multilateral, one that listens to allies and doesn't just tell them what to do. And in that sense, it's an effort to, I think, reclaim a tradition in American foreign policy that was in existence from really Roosevelt, from Pearl Harbor, right through the presidency of her husband, Bill Clinton. And in that sense, it is both a return to a previous tradition, but obviously that we're in a new era now because of terrorism, because of global warming. So I think she's trying to both reclaim a tradition that's popular at home and abroad, but update it to the new conditions of the world.
Christopher Dickey in Paris, speak to expectations for a moment. In Europe, in the Middle East, Obama and Clinton said a lot on the campaign trail. She characterized him as naive. She was very, very tough. Do you see Europe and the Middle East expecting something very different, a U-turn, a sharp turn from this administration?
Oh, I think people are expecting a very different policies from this administration, from Obama and from Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, than they had under Bush. And I think what we're hearing right now from Clinton is definitely a contrast to what we heard from the Bush administration. The emphasis on diplomacy, the emphasis on actual leadership, moral leadership, rather than simple pronouncements of moral superiority and authority, will be received very well overseas and will serve the United States' interests very well, at least in the medium term. Of course, once we stop the speech-making and get down to the nitty-gritty of policy, how to address the situation in Gaza, for instance, and between the Israelis and Palestinians, then things start to get very messy indeed. But right now, the tone that's being set is, I think, extremely positive and will be received that way.
Here she is this morning talking about smart power in the Middle East, in particular the situation in Gaza with Israel.
That brings real security to Israel, normal and positive relations with its neighbors, independence, economic progress, and security to the Palestinians in their own state. We will exert every effort to support the work of Israelis and Palestinians who seek that result. It is critical not only to the parties involved, but to undermining the forces of alienation and violent extremism around the world. For terrorism, we must have a comprehensive strategy, levering intelligence, diplomacy, and military assets to defeat al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups by rooting out their networks and drying up their support for violent and nihilistic extremism. The gravest threat that America faces is the danger that weapons of mass destruction will fall into the hands of terrorists. We must curb the spread and use of these weapons, nuclear, biological, chemical, or cyber, and prevent the development and use of dangerous new weapons. Therefore, while defending against the threat of terrorism, we will also seize the parallel opportunity to get America back in the business of engaging other nations to reduce nuclear stockpiles. The Non-Proliferation Treaty is the cornerstone of the non-proliferation regime, and the United States must exercise leadership needed to shore it up. So we will seek agreements with Russia to secure further reductions in weapons under START, We will work with this committee and the Senate toward ratification of the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, and we will dedicate efforts to revive negotiations on a verifiable fissile material cutoff treaty. At the same time, we will continue to work to prevent proliferation in North Korea and Iran, to secure loose nuclear weapons and materials, and to shut down the market for selling them, as Senator Lugar has pushed for so many years. These threats, however, cannot be addressed in isolation. Smart power requires reaching out to both friends and adversaries to bolster old alliances and to forge new ones. That means strengthening the alliances that have stood the test of time, especially with our NATO partners and our allies in Asia. Our alliance with Japan is a cornerstone of American policy in Asia, essential to maintaining peace and prosperity in the Asia-Pacific region, and based on shared values and mutual interests. We also have crucial economic and security partnerships with South Korea, Australia, and other friends in ASEAN. We will build on our economic and political partnership with India, the world's most populous democracy and a nation with growing influence in the world. Our traditional relationships of confidence and trust with Europe will be deepened. Disagreements are inevitable, but on most global issues, we have no more trusted allies. The new administration will reach out across the Atlantic to leaders in France, Germany, the United Kingdom, and others, including and especially the new democracies. President-elect Obama and I seek a future of cooperative engagement with the Russian government on matters of strategic importance, while standing strongly for American values and international norms. China is critically important as an actor who will be changing the global landscape. We want a positive and cooperative relationship with China, one where we deepen and strengthen our ties on a number of issues and candidly address differences where they persist. But this is not a one-way effort. Much of what we will do depends on the choices China makes about its future at home and abroad. With both Russia and China, we should work together on vital security and economic issues like terrorism, proliferation, climate change, and reforming financial markets. The world is now, as Senator Dodd said, in the cross currents of the most severe global economic contraction since the Great Depression. The history of that crisis teaches us the consequences of diplomatic failures and uncoordinated reactions. We have already seen this crisis extend beyond the housing and banking sectors, and our solutions will have to be as wide as scope as the causes themselves, taking into account the complexities of the global economy, the geopolitics, and the continued political and economic repercussions from the damage already done. But here again, as we work to repair the damage, we can find new ways of working together. For too long, we've merely talked about the need to engage emerging powers in global economic governance. The time to take action is upon us. The recent G20 meeting that President Bush hosted was a first step, but developing patterns of sustained engagement will take hard work and careful negotiation. We know that emerging markets like China and India, Brazil and South Africa, and Indonesia are feeling the effects of the current crisis, and we all stand to benefit in both the short and long term if they are part of the solution and become partners in maintaining global economic stability. In our efforts to return to economic growth here in the United States, we have an especially critical need to work more closely with Canada, our largest trading partner, and Mexico, our third largest. Canada and Mexico are also our biggest suppliers of imported energy. More broadly, we must build a deeper partnership with Mexico to address the shared dangers arising from drug trafficking and the challenges along our border, an effort begun this week with the meeting between President-elect Obama and President Calderon. Throughout our hemisphere, we have opportunities to enhance our relationships that will benefit all of us. We will return to a policy of a vigorous involvement, partnership even, with Latin America, from the Caribbean to Central America to South America. We share common political, economic, and strategic interests with our friends to the south, as well as many of our citizens who share ancestral and cultural legacies. We're looking forward to working on many issues during the Summit of the Americas in April and taking up the President-elect's call for a new energy partnership around shared technology and new investments in renewable energy.
Hillary
and in
Clinton
Africa, the foreign policy objectives of the Obama administration
testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning. Christopher Dickey of Newsweek joins us from Paris. Charles Kupchan in Washington, D.C. Let's get at least one call in here. David in Nashville, Tennessee. You've been listening along with us. What's your question, David?
Gary, Tom, hi. I hope you're all doing well. I have just a straight general question.
But we also intend to support the...
That what are the greatest opportunities that Obama could work with, and what are the greatest dangers that he faces over the next 4 years with his new Secretary of State?
David, let us pick it straight up. Chris Dickey, I'll put it first to you. Greatest opportunity, greatest danger, next 4 years.
Greatest opportunity is that she will help him and help the United States lead the way in exactly the direction she's talking about, toward greater cooperation, clearer moral leadership, a stronger sense of what America really stands for. Because, in fact, most of the world really loves the idea of the United States, even if they've managed to hate the United States and what it was doing over the last 8 years. So there's a lot of faith to be restored, not just to be won. And they probably can do that. The greatest risk vis-a-vis Hillary is that she will undermine the authority of Obama, that there will arise differences between them, the kind of sniping that's so common in Washington, blind sources, each one talking about the other. That would really be very damaging to American leadership and to this new administration.
Charles Kupchan, how great the risk of that, that a gap would open between Obama and Clinton, with the stakes as high as they are, is that really a risk?
It's something that people here talk about in the back rooms, but my sense is that, especially if you look at the campaign, you look at the transition, President-elect Obama will run a very disciplined operation, and I don't expect freelancing by Senator Clinton or anyone else. I think the biggest risk is that events run away from the administration, that is to say that in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Gaza, the situation becomes more and more difficult despite the best efforts of the Obama administration. And in that sense, they simply are running to keep up with crisis. And I would say that the greatest opportunity is forging a real team of countries and players, the EU, as Hillary Clinton was just saying, Russia and China. Get these countries on board. Don't set them against the United States to deal with the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, to deal with global warming. There is an enormous opportunity because of Barack Obama's popularity to forge a really wide global coalition.
Let's go back to Senator Clinton as we approach the break. She's talking about health issues in Africa and beyond.
International organizations, NGOs, to build schools and train teachers. The president-elect supports a global education fund to bolster secular education around the world. I want to emphasize the importance to us of this bottoms-up approach. The president-elect and I believe in this so strongly. Investing in our common humanity through social development is not marginal to our foreign policy, but essential to the realization of our goals. More than 2 billion people worldwide live on less than $2 a day. They're facing rising food prices and widespread hunger. We have to expand civil and political rights in countries that are plagued by poverty, hunger, and disease, but our pleas will fall on deaf ears unless democracy actually improves people's lives while weeding out the corruption that too often stands in the way of progress. Our foreign policy must reflect our deep commitment to help millions of oppressed people around the world, and of particular concern to me is the plight of women and girls, who comprise the majority of the world's unhealthy, unschooled, unfed, and unpaid. If half the world's population remains vulnerable to economic, political, legal, and social marginalization, our hope of advancing democracy and prosperity is in serious jeopardy.
Senator Hillary Clinton testifying this morning before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back with more testimony and view. We're talking about Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and listening in on her Senate confirmation hearing This morning in Washington, she's wrapping up her opening remarks right now.
And USAID carries out its critical development missions in some of the most difficult places on our earth. These public servants are too often the unsung heroes. They are in the trenches, putting our policies and values to work in a complicated and dangerous world. Many risk their lives, and some have lost their lives in service to our nation. They need and deserve the resources, training, and support to succeed. I know this committee, and I hope the American public understand that Foreign Service officers and civil service professionals and development experts are doing invaluable work, and it is the work of the American people. Whether helping American businesses make inroads in new markets, or being on the other end of the phone when someone gets in trouble beyond our shores, needs a passport, needs advice at an embassy, or doing the delicate work of diplomacy and development with foreign governments that leads to arms control and trade agreements, peace treaties, and post-conflict reconstruction. Standing up for greater human rights and empowerment, broader cultural understanding, and building alliances. State Department is a large, multi-dimensional organization, but not the placid, idle bureaucracy that some have suggested. It is an outpost for American values that protects our citizens and safeguards our democratic institutions in times both turbulent and tame. State Department employees offer a lifeline of hope and help, often the only lifeline for people in foreign lands who are oppressed, silenced, and marginalized. We must not shortchange them or ourselves. One of my first priorities is to make sure that the State Department and USAID have the resources they need, and I will be back to make the case to the committee for full funding of the President's budget request. But I will work just as hard to make sure we manage those resources prudently, efficiently, and effectively. You know, like most Americans, when I was growing up, I never had the chance to travel widely. Most of my early professional career was as a lawyer and an advocate for children and the poor who found themselves disadvantaged here at home. But during the 8 years of my husband's presidency, and now 8 years as the senator from New York, I have been privileged to travel on behalf of our country, and I've had the opportunity to get to know many world leaders. As a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, I've spent time with our military commanders as well as our brave troops. I've immersed myself in a number of military issues, and I've spent many hours with American and non-American aid workers, businessmen and women, religious leaders, teachers, doctors, nurses, students, volunteers, all who have made it their mission to help other people across the world. And I've seen countless ordinary people in foreign capitals, small towns, and rural villages who live in a world far removed from our experiences. In recent years, as other nations have risen to compete for military, economic, and political influence, some have argued that we have reached the end of the American moment in world history. Well, I disagree. Yes, the conventional paradigms have shifted, but America's success has never been solely a function of our power. It has always been rooted in and inspired by our values. With so many troubles here at home and around the world, millions of people are still trying to come to this country, legally and illegally. Why? Because we are guided by unchanging truths that all people are created equal, that each person has the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And in these truths, we will find, as we have for more than two centuries, the courage, the discipline, and the creativity to meet the challenges of this ever-changing world. I am humbled to be a public servant and honored by the responsibility placed on me should I be confirmed by our president-elect, who embodies the American dream, not only here at home, but far beyond our shores. No matter how daunting the challenges may be, I have a steadfast faith in this country and in our people, and I am proud to be an American at the dawning of this new American moment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of this committee, for granting me your time and attention today. I know there's a lot more territory to cover, and I'd be delighted to answer questions.
Hillary Clinton, wrapping up her opening comments before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on Capitol Hill today. Her daughter, Chelsea, sitting over her right shoulder, and all the senators arrayed there. Joining us and listening in, Christopher Dickey, Paris bureau chief for Newsweek magazine, the Middle East regional editor, and from Washington, Charles Kupchan, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Charles Kupchan, here is a woman very fluent right from the get-go in the issues and behind, is sort of reading between the lines in the issues and politics of foreign policy in this country, as she comes off in Washington there today.
No question about it. I mean, she's been in the Washington breathing tank for a couple of decades now, so she knows how to work the system and how to do business in Washington. I'd say there are two things that she's got to focus on in the near term. One is the domestic politics of foreign policy, and that is trying to rebuild bipartisanship, to put together a coalition of Republicans and Democrats on foreign policy, because that centrist coalition really fell apart during the Bush years. And the second is going to be a budgetary issue. Obviously, we're in the middle of a financial crisis. There isn't a lot of cash washing around, and she wants to build up the State Department. She has picked as a deputy someone named Jack Lew, who was a budget official under the Clinton administration. And Jack Lew is there to get more warm bodies, to increase the budget. And she's going to have to really get on the top of her game, because she's going to have a tough sell convincing Capitol Hill to give her the resources that the State Department needs.
Chris Dickey, some issues are going to be front and center right away. Gaza exploding as she speaks in Washington. Iran and the nuclear issue there just doesn't go away as an issue. What are you anticipating? You're Mideast regional editor. What are you anticipating from the Obama-Clinton team on those two key questions in particular?
I think that there have been indications that they're going to test the waters for dialogue with both the Iranians and with Hamas, probably not at the level of State Department diplomacy, more likely through the Central Intelligence Agency or other quieter and more discreet means. But I think she sent a clear signal that the United States not only wants to build, she was explicit about it, not only wants to build its relationship with its allies and repair its relationship with its traditional allies, but also to reach out to its adversaries. Now, that doesn't mean unconditional talks. That doesn't mean recognition or acceptance of what those adversaries may do. But it does mean sitting down and trying to figure out exactly where there might be room to improve the situation. This is, of course, a radical departure from the kinds of policies that the Bush administration has pursued. And we can only hope that it leads to more positive results.
Senator Kerry is just asking Senator Clinton now about carrots and sticks with Iran. Let's listen.
The thinking at this stage, I know it's early, but can you share with us what additional carrots the administration might have in mind? Why do you believe those might be enough to change Iran's calculations? Are tougher sanctions achievable, and how are you and the administration viewing this at this point?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and obviously the incoming administration views with great concern the role that Iran is playing in the world, its sponsorship of terrorism, its continuing interference with the functioning of other governments, and its pursuit of nuclear weapons. There is an ongoing policy review that the Obama administration has undertaken. But I think, as the President-elect said just this past weekend, our goal will be to do everything we can pursue through diplomacy, through the use of sanctions, through creating better coalitions with countries that we believe also have a big stake in preventing Iran from becoming a nuclear weapon power, to try to prevent this from occurring. We are not taking any option off the table at all. But we will pursue a new, perhaps different approach that will become a cornerstone of what the Obama administration believes is an attitude toward engagement that might bear fruit. We have no illusions, Mr. Chairman, that even with a new administration looking to try to engage Iran in a way that might influence its behavior, that we can predict the results. But the president-elect is committed to that course, and we will pursue it.
Do you believe that tougher U.N. sanctions are available from which to choose? And secondly, are they achievable?
You know, it's kind of like the experimenter's bias in a way.
Again, still speaking here of Iran.
We won't know what we're capable
and its nuclear
of achieving
program.
Until we're actually there working on it. We have a commitment to engaging with international organizations in a very intense and ongoing way. We are going to be
Christopher
working
Dickey in
with
Paris, you're listening there as she describes their approach, what it may be to Iran. You just talked about the possibility of opening conversation, but that you hear her saying, we'll do everything we can, bring a new attitude toward engagement. That's warm but vague. But no option off the table at all, Hillary Clinton saying, and no illusions. Does it sound like a new line to you, Chris?
Well, I think the talk of engagement absolutely sounds like a new line. Also, as she was talking, I was waiting to see if she would say anything that might touch on the question of oil prices, which in some ways will be the secret weapon in dealing with Iran. When oil prices were $140 a barrel, there was little chance that anybody could do anything serious to affect Iran militarily or even diplomatically or in terms of sanctions, basically because that was only going to drive the prices up more further into the stratosphere. Now that oil prices are down around $40 a barrel, Iran has very little cushion. Its bad government is much more obvious to its own people. It's the shield that high oil prices provided for it has disappeared, and that makes sanctions more effective. It even makes the threat of some kind of military action more frightening to Iran than it was before.
And maybe,
so I think that we're in a more, the U.S. is in a more powerful position now just by dint of the collapse of oil prices.
And maybe more open to a conversation. Let's get a call from Mary Jane in Hanover, New Hampshire. Mary Jane, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say how proud I am that Hillary Clinton is, you know, was chosen as Secretary of State in the Obama administration. And also, I just wanted to also, underline the importance that she raised about the abuse of women and children throughout the world, here in the United States and throughout the world. And I just, haven't heard that much strength or that much discussion or that much emphasis put on that issue.
Mary Jane, your line's breaking up a bit, but you're exactly right. Women and children, for that matter, front and center in her opening statement, very clearly and without apology, put right there in the middle of her top priorities as she described them. Charles Kupchan, Hillary Clinton has been a big champion on this front for a long time. Do you expect women's issues in particular to simply have a bigger place at the table with her as Secretary of State?
I do, and I think in many respects what she'll do is export some of the attention that she's given to women's issues, to education, to development, to health here in the United States, export that to the international stage. And I think that'll be very much consistent with President Obama's own inclinations, and we can expect more attention to this whole host of what you might call the softer issues. And it's interesting that in many respects, the political spectrum as a whole has moved in that direction after 9/11, that even the Republicans under President Bush put a lot of focus on fighting HIV, creating the Millennium Challenge account to get aid to Africa. And so in that sense, I think the center of gravity politically has moved, and I expect Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama to move it even further in that direction.
We saw that in the opening statement by Senator Richard Lugar, Republican of Indiana. One of his top priorities, he was saying, was addressing global hunger. Christopher Dickey, there was an interesting comment. We heard Hillary Clinton make it, saying that some say that we are reaching the end of the American moment in history. She said, I disagree. With your view from Europe, from the Middle East, is that a European view, a Middle East view, that the American moment is sort of passing its zenith here? Is there is an American challenge to push back against that and an opportunity to do it here, Christopher?
You know, I stopped hearing that line of argument almost completely the day that Obama was elected. I think that the sense of the trend line throughout the Bush administration was one huge mistake after another, whether the war in Iraq, the pursuit of the war in Afghanistan, the economic collapse. And then Obama is elected, and all of a sudden, people are talking about the United States again as they had always wanted to talk about it, as a light among the nations, a light unto the nations. I don't want to overstate that, but I actually completely agree with Senator Clinton that it's the demise of the United States has been greatly overstated, and this is a moment in which good leadership can reclaim the moral standing of the United States, which is really the most important standing that it has.
We'll let Hillary go. Clinton go out in her own words today. Christopher Dickey with Newsweek, Charles Kupchan, the Council on Foreign Relations. Thank you very much to each of you. Here she is talking more about whether she would talk with Iran.
Well, I know you've been very careful about that, and I think it's been appropriate, and I think a wise course, and I look forward to you being able to get deeply engaged. Last question, just quickly.
From Senator John Kerry.
Last year, six colleagues and I, including Senator Levin, wrote to Secretary Rice urging her to establish an interest section in Tehran. It just seems counterproductive and almost incomprehensible that we're not on the ground in some of these places. We don't have an ambassador in Syria, for instance. We should have. So I would ask you if you have made a decision, and will you proceed forward to create an interest section in Tehran and immediately put an ambassador back into Syria?
Again, Mr. Chairman, these are matters that are part of our policy review, and we will turn to them with great diligence and attention as soon as we are able to.
Diplomatic Hillary Clinton before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning. Again, our thanks to Christopher Dickey and Charles Kupchan for joining us in this hour. Thank you for joining us as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.